Welcome to the April 3rd, 2019 Board of Directors meeting for the Eastern Municipal Water District. We will start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Jeff Wall, would you be kind enough to lead us this morning?
Thank you. I may salute our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Cody, do we have a guest to be introduced this morning?
Yes, we have one guest, Kevin Ross, with Terra Verde Energy.
Do we have any public comment? I don't have any cards. We do not. Very good. I understand we're going to item two. I understand staff has a PowerPoint presentation that they'd like to give the board before we move on to item two. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Please proceed. Good morning.
So, thank you, Molly. I'm happy today to present our recommendations for advancing our Phase 3 Solar Renewable Energy Initiative. This is an item that we've presented to the board over the past couple of years as we've advanced the feasibility and the analysis and the various components of the project. But before I do that, I really want to acknowledge the staff that had a key role in this, primarily Greg Kowalski, who's going to follow my presentation with some of the details on the particular projects we're recommending today, as well as Corey Wallace in the engineering and new business departments. They have done a great job in getting this effort to where it is today. And I also want to give mention to Kevin Ross, our consultant at Terra Verde. This has been over a two-year effort in developing the feasibility and the analysis and putting a project together that we're going to recommend. We think it's going to be a very successful project, and I'll share that with you now. So by way of background, this is a recommendation for our Phase 3 solar initiative. And as you know, we have a strategic plan initiative of energy independence. And that's to plan and cost-effectively implement renewable energy projects with sufficient generation to meet the district's entire net energy demands while minimizing our carbon footprint. And what that means for the Phase 3 initiatives in particular are cost-effective additions to our solar projects that we have in place, the Phase 1 and Phase 2 facilities. We're specifically looking at an expansion of our net energy metering projects at five locations, as well as a renewable energy self-generation bill credit transfer project, RESPCT, initiative. I've presented that to the board in the past. As far as the, just a reminder, that is a program, a tariff that's available to governmental agencies that allows an entity to install solar at one location and transfer bill credits to other other accounts within the jurisdiction's control. Being as though Eastern has over 250 Southern California Edison accounts, we have plenty of opportunity to transfer those credits from a central generation. So also by way of background, our renewable energy portfolio that exists today, as you know, we have two fuel cell installations, one at the Moreno Valley facility, one at Paris. Moreno Valley was installed in 2009. That's a 900 kW biogas fuel cell operation. And we have a 600 kW facility also on biogas at Paris. It was installed in 2012. Those two combined for a total of 1.5 megawatts of production. We installed our first solar initiative, Phase 1 solar, in 2014. That is here at this location, our headquarters facility. That's a 0.5 megawatt installation, and we followed very quickly after that with our Phase 2 project in 2015 with 5 megawatts at the Regional Water Reclamation Facilities as well as the desalter. So in total, at that point, we had have currently approximately 7 megawatts of renewable generation. Today, we're recommending a project that will advance under a power purchase agreement an additional 16 megawatts of renewable generation, bringing our total megawatts installed to over 22 at 58.6 million kilowatt hours of renewable energy production. And just for reference, the district purchased about 100 million kilowatt hours from utilities, Southern California Edison, in 2017. Significant portion of our portfolio. So, as well as by way of background, in 2016, the board approved and authorized a contract with Terra Verde Renewable Consultants to assist us in conducting a feasibility study. Again, we looked at NEM 2.0 opportunities as well as the RESVCT tariff opportunity. We also considered battery storage alternatives, and that economic evaluation that was done in 2016 resulted in 25-year net savings to the district of over $25 million and an initial system size of 14.3 megawatts of installed generation. That number has significantly increased, and I'll get into that in a bit, but we're very pleased with the results of our solicitation for PPAs as well as the civil construction that has led to significantly enhanced savings over the 25-year recommended term. So with the board's approval, we advanced RFPs for a power purchase agreement back in July of 2018. We received 10 vendor proposals. It was a good effort, a good response from the market. We shortlisted to three vendors. Those were REC Solar, Borrego Solar, and NextEra. And we've recommended REC Solar after completing best and final offers and a shortlisting process. We're recommending REC Solar be the awarded firm to move forward with the power purchase agreement. They were the highest ranked, as well as provided the best overall cost value to the district in their proposal. So in parallel with that, and this has been presented with the board previously as well, district initiated civil site improvements at these five locations. Very favorable results with that civil work, basically preparation for the pads is what that amounts to for construction of the solar. Our engineer's estimate was nearly $13 million, and bids came in, the low bid was about $7.3 million from Suka Construction, which is a reliable contractor that we've done business with in the past. So very favorable results there. As well as with this power purchase agreement, the district has the ability to transfer those civil costs. We will initially contract with Suka to perform this work, but those costs will be transferred to REC upon initiation of this project, pending board approval, and we will be reimbursed for that amount up to $10.1 million of the project cost by REC, and those costs will be included in the power purchase agreement. That's a benefit to the district in that the investors on the REC side, on the solar side, realize the tax benefit from that amount of money, the 30% investment tax credit, and then pass that through in the savings to us via the PPA. So what do those PPA rates look like? The facilities are listed across the top there. You can see they range from 5.8 cents at San Jacinto North, that would be the RESVCT project, to a top of 9.2 cents. And for perspective again, district's average cost of electricity for 2018, calendar 2018, was approximately 12.x cents. So these are all favorable PPA rates at each location. Greg, following my presentation, will show you the layout and configuration of the different facilities. You'll note that the Moreno Valley location is somewhat costlier than the others, and that's due to the site situation there, and Greg will point out how the power blocks are installed in Moreno Valley and the runs that are necessary there, which led to a higher PPA rate, but again, lower than the cost of purchased electricity. The system size, as differed from the 2016 feasibility study, is now nearly 16 megawatts of installed power, and we're looking at approximately $40 million of 25-year net savings. Very, very favorable. Some of the reasons for that increase in savings that I've mentioned is the PPA rates that we received as part of the RFP were significantly lower than what was initially planned, and our feasibility assessment was conservative to begin with. Four out of those five projects were considerably lower. As I mentioned, the civil site improvements were much less than the engineer's estimate, so that came in at 7.3 versus nearly $13 million there. the PV systems, the size increased from 14 megawatts to now 16 megawatts of installed solar photovoltaic system, therefore creating higher yields in the system. That contributes to enhanced savings. And one of the other items I wanted to point out there, working with Aqua, we secured, and with Kevin's input, we secured an indifference payment from Southern California Edison. What this is due to the changes in utility rate structures in the midst of this project, the time of use change that I shared with the board before related to the duck curve and the overgeneration of solar renewables. We were in the application process for this project for interconnection at that time, and because we were at that stage, the utilities were required to provide us an indifference payment, which will be payable upon completion of our project to the tune of $700,000. So that was a big plus to our project. That will come directly to the district. In addition to that, increased valuation of renewable energy certificates, so we track our RECs that are associated with that, and that market now has increased quite a bit since 2016. All of those factors have led to significant savings increase that was projected in 2016. So our solar power purchase agreements that are being recommended today, these are fixed price per kilowatt hour contracts that will be in existence for that 25-year period. There are minor, fairly non-substantive adjustments that will be eligible upon initial implementation of the contracts. That pertains to the investment tax credit and the percentage of those civil costs that I discussed that are available to the investors to recover the tax benefit. Those we've currently planned in our savings projection and in these rates for 80% of that would be recoverable. Basically, the difference between an 80% recoverable ITC on those items and 100% are hundreds of a cent, so these don't have a significant impact on the overall PPA cost. That, in addition to the interconnection costs from the utilities, we have those in estimate. Those won't be finalized until the projects are closer to construction. But again, hundreds of a cent of adjustment there. These are 25-year term contracts. As I mentioned earlier, the civil and other costs are reimbursable by REC to the district. So effectively, the district will not be out of pocket. This is a true PPA. And that does help to improve our economics on the project. There are buyout options within the PPAs at year 7, 10, 20, and 25. So once the investors have recovered their investment, it's not unusual for the developers, REC in this case, to agree to sell the facilities back to the agency. So there's some provisions in the proposed agreements to cover that. Either have performance guarantees as well as property lease easements associated with each site. So the vendor will lease the properties where each location will be. They lease that for, let's say it's $100 over the entire term for all the facilities. And over the course of the agreement, they will then sell us the power that's generated. So with that, I'll turn it over to Greg. But if there's any questions, Greg will run through some of the details of the locations and the specifics on each project. Are there any questions I can answer at this time? I'll turn it to Greg then to finalize the presentation.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Good morning, everyone. So the project involves constructing five facilities at our regional plants and at the desalter. We're basically building expansion facilities via the NEM 2.0 program at four of the plants, and then one new RESBCT 5 megawatt installation at the adjacent parcel adjacent to the San Jacinto treatment facility, which is a 200-acre parcel we recently acquired. As far as layout of Moreno Valley, as you can see on the diagram here, the red shows the power blocks that are to be installed as part of this project. At Moreno Valley, it's slightly more complex because we're building actual solar arrays on the south side and the north side of the existing installation that you can see there. I can kind of highlight the existing installation. But essentially, we're constructing on approximately 10.5 acres of parcel at this site. In addition to that, we are needing to provide the solar PPA provider access. They will need access through the main entrance of the plant and access over the proposed conduit route. That's typical for all the sites. At Paris Valley Regional, we're looking to again expand to the west, additional solar arrays beyond the existing plant there that you can see. It's kind of grayed out. And we're looking to expand via approximately 21 acres into the farmer's field at the conclusion, or at the beginning of the project, the farmer's lease will be canceled. The PPA provider will be provided access to the main entrance of the plant here as well, and access over the conduit route to the main switch gear here. And that is the blue line going to the north and south. As far as Sun City and the Desalter, again, very similar situation, expanding to the west, additional solar arrays. Again, all these arrays are going in a single access tracker, similar to the existing installations. The difference here, they'll take access off a honey run versus the main plant entrance, and then they'll have access over the proposed conduit route, and they'll build this on approximately 9 acres. Moving on to San Jacinto, directly adjacent to the existing installation, we'll be constructing some additional arrays via 3 power blocks. And again, similar to the other sites, providing access to the main entrance to the plant and then access to the main switchgear. This will this facility will take up approximately 9.6 acres directly east of the existing plant. And then our ResBCT project is basically a new facility altogether. It's a greenfield site, essentially. We're constructing a similar solar array layout on approximately 30 acres of the 200-acre parcel that we have just north of the San Jacinto plant. Again, they'll take access via the main plant entrance and then also over the conduit route, which was a new installation, new switchgear that'll be installed just south of the plant near the existing canal. As far as schedule goes, we'll be advancing the project upon approval on concurrent headings. The design-build process with the PPA provider and advancing the civil site work with Sukage. The civil site work will be completed immediately and on a staggered delivery. As they deliver those projects, we'll be completing the design and then advancing the construction of the actual solar arrays. And then once that begins in about August of this year, we'll complete staggered delivery of commissioning of those facilities through early to late 2020. So with a project of this size and complexity, there's quite a few recommendations to complete. But we're recommending that we approve and authorize a variety of agreements to complete the work. So first and foremost, the PPA, the power purchase agreement for all the sites with REC Solar, as well as property lease and easements with REC Solar. We'd also like to advance the construction contract for the civil work with Super Construction, the approximate amount of $7.4 million. And during the project, we'll need support services from a variety of professionals. We would like to advance a technical services agreement with Terra Verde Engineering in the amount of not to exceed $282,000, as well as a contract with Crowlo Engineers for specialty electrical services during construction in the amount of approximately $140,000. We'll also need geotechnical testing and observation during the civil work, so we're looking to advance a contract with Kleinfelder for approximately $163,000. In addition to that, we request administrative award of other ancillary contracts and agreements to complete the work through final implementation. And that basically takes us to our request for appropriation. So we're requesting appropriation in the amount of approximately $9 million to take us to a total of $10.7 million in appropriation to date, which, as Dan said earlier, $10.1 million of that is reimbursable via the power purchase agreement process. But before we take action on this item, we have to conduct a hearing in alignment with California Government Code Section 4217. So with that, I think we can commence the hearing.
Before you go there, does the board have any questions?
Are there any questions?
Okay. With that, this is the time and the place set for a duly noticed public hearing of the Eastern Municipal Water District regarding the proposed resolution making certain findings for the Phase 3 Solar Photovoltaic Renewable Energy Initiative under Government Code Section 4217.10. And that was our staff report, correct?
I think Greg has some further comments associated with the public hearing.
Okay, I'll do that now.
Okay.
California Government Code Section 4217.1 allows...
Excuse me, Greg. Mr. Chair, you need to declare the public hearing open.
Oh, I'm sorry. The public hearing is now open.
Thank you.
California Government Code Section 4217.1 allows public agencies to enter into energy services agreements for the purchase of energy from solar systems installed on the district's property with the greatest flexibility in structuring agreements whereby economic benefits may be maximized. It also allows the district to select the proposal that is deemed to be in the best interest of the district and best value. Prior to approving the power purchase agreements, or PPAs, the district's board of directors must fulfill two requirements under this code. One, make the following findings. A, that the anticipated cost to the district for electrical energy provided by the project under the PPA will be less than the anticipated marginal cost of electrical energy that would have been consumed by the district in the absence of the project under the PPA. And two, or B, excuse me, that the difference, if any, between the fair rental value for the real property subject to the ground lease and agreed rent is anticipated to be offset by below market energy purchases or other benefits provided under the PPA. And two, hold a public hearing to consider approval of the PPA, for which a public notice must be given at least 2 weeks prior to the hearing. The notice of the public hearing was posted on March 15, 2019. In conclusion, based on the 25-year cash flow savings projections for each project prepared by Terra Verde Energy, there is sufficient basis for the above findings.
Thank you. I would ask the Secretary of the Board how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on March 15, 2019 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the district boundary in accordance with Government Code Section 4217.10.
Thank you. If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the proposal, I would ask her to provide the copies to the Board at this time.
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Thank you. At this time, are there any members of the public who wish to speak on this matter? If so, please come forward to the podium. I see none. At this time, we are ready to approve the following resolution. Make findings, authorizations, and approve entering into an energy service contract. I will accept a motion and a second for the resolution.
Mr. Chair, one, I hate to be formal, but we need to close the public hearing.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. In that case, I will close the public hearing, and then I will seek a motion and a second on the resolution.
I'll move the resolution.
I'll second.
Very good. The resolution has been, we'll take the vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The resolution has just been adopted. The findings that the anticipated cost of the district for electrical energy provided by the project will be less than anticipated cost to the district, either consumed or purchased energy in the absence of the project, authorizes the project and authorizes the district to enter into a power purchase agreement and related agreements. Now I understand we have to take another vote, correct? So I will look for a motion and a second on item 2A.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution passes with Director Sullivan and Director Slauson absent. Good. Thank you all. We'll move on to executive reports. Nick?
I do have a couple of items of interest that I'd like to share with you. The first is... is related to the recycled water usage for the Inland Empire Energy Center. I think you're all aware that IEEC is a priority one recycled water customer with Eastern. They have a contract. Their contract actually provides for about 4,800 acre feet of recycled water allocation. The contract goes on to require that they use a minimum of 50% of that amount. If they do not, they have the option to pay or lose the recycled water allocation that they don't use. If they don't pay down what they have not used, then the contract provides for a mechanism to reduce their allocation. IEC has not been using anywhere near their 50% minimum over the last few years, but they have been opting to pay down that amount because they wanted to maintain and retain that 4,800 acre feet. This year, I think the realization has come to them that they're not going to be using anywhere near what their contract provides for. So we had a meeting with Frank Escobar, who's the director of their operations over there, just a few days ago. And they met with us and kind of talked through their options, and they're looking to move forward and allow for the contract to reduce their allocation amount based on the actual usage of the last few years, which has been on average about 350 acre feet. Nowhere close to what their contract provides for. The reduction will bring their new allocation down to about 2,800, so a reduction of about 2,000 acre feet. So Jeff Wall and Kaz Gadirian team will be recognizing that reduction in their contract commitment and looking at how that water gets reallocated to other users. And then in subsequent years, if they continue to use water at the pace that they are, that the contract will continue to ratchet down to a point where they're at an allocation that works for them. So just wanted to bring you up to speed on that. Any questions on that item? And then just a quick update on our lab renovation project. You're all aware a few months ago we awarded a contract to Toby Schultz contractor for the renovation of that project. That contract was awarded. They're under contract right now. In the first few months they've been actually been very busy in taking care of a lot of early submittals. We wanted to get all that out of the way so when they do hit the ground, they hit it running, and we can expedite that work. In the meantime, also, we've been working with lab staff to get them all packed up and relocated to make room for the construction contract that will occur. So things have been going well, and just want to bring this to your attention because about mid-May, the contract is going to be constructing a screening wall along the corridor adjacent to the lab there, just to separate the construction activity and any disruption from the rest of the operations in this facility. So that will occur in the corridor, and then by mid-late May, they'll actually break ground on the construction activities, and the schedule is such that we're looking to have that project wrapped up before the end of the year.
Very good. Are they going to have a construction trailer on site here? And
they will, and we've got a designated area for that.
Very good. Thank you, Nick. Laura, do you have anything this morning?
Yes, quickly. We're going to be nearing the end of our AMI installation, and we'll be holding a kind of a celebration of the end of that project at after our May 1st board meeting, so I hope you can all make it.
Very good. Thank you. Joe, do you have anything this morning?
Good morning. Nothing today.
And Jeff?
I'm just give a brief update on recycled water operations. We are still experiencing relatively low sales based on the previous storms. 50% chance of rain, I think, tomorrow and Friday. To date, we've discharged just under 5,400 acre feet, which is obviously not what we choose to do. But when we have these long spread out winters, we're forced into that predicament. So, yeah. Hopefully demands will pick up here shortly and we'll cease discharge within the next week or two.
Thank you. We will move on to item 4 now, which is our consent calendar. Does any member of the board have an item they wish to pull off the consent calendar or inquiries with?
I'll move the consent calendar.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The consent calendar is passed with Director Sullivan and Director Slauson absent. That will take us to item 5, our action calendar. 5A is to approve and authorize a contract with SS Mechanical for $103,372 and Evacua Water Technologies for $131,886 for the Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Skimming Equipment Replacement Project for a total project cost not to exceed $260,000.
Matt Will Interest presenting.
Good morning.
So this project is to replace some equipment in the primary and secondary clarifiers at Temecula. And the clarifier's main purpose is to take advantage of gravity to get solids to settle to the bottom so we can pump them out and send them to the next process. However, there's some material that won't settle, like fat oil and grease, and the primaries will float to the top. And if we do nothing about that, it causes some major issues. So we always provide skimming equipment so that we can draw those off the top and also send those to solids handling. Some of the equipment that was installed was made of carbon steel, and especially in the primaries, the environment's very corrosive with a lot of hydrogen sulfide. And over the years, the skimming equipment has become severely corroded to the point that they're not functioning or they're functioning very poorly. So this project is to replace the 10 remaining carbon steel skimming pipes with stainless steel. The other units that are currently stainless are faring very well. Some of them were installed in the late 90s, and they still look almost brand new. So this should be a good upgrade for us. To get the work done, we did ask for proposals from our on-call contractors. SS Mechanical was the lowest bid received. They've done work for us in the past. We're very pleased with their quality of work and their service. And Evacua was they're the original equipment manufacturer who did the original engineering and supply of the equipment, and they were also the lowest cost for the equipment. So the recommendation is to award a contract to SS Mechanical for installation services for $103,000 and a contract to Evacua for approximately $132,000 for the equipment and a total expected project budget not to exceed $260,000.
Great. Any questions? I'll look for a motion to move the item.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
Director Sullivan and Director Slauson absent. We'll move on to item 5B, which is to approve and authorize acquisition of property, assessor parcel number 547-130-008 in the city of San Jacinto for an appropriation of $2,210,000. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Director Pauley and members of the board. It's my privilege to bring this item to the boards for its consideration today. This is assessor's parcel number 547-130-008, but also 1531 Mountain Avenue. It's a 9-acre piece of property in the east side of the city of San Jacinto. Just in terms of background, the district constructed the integrated recharge and recovery program. It consisted of 35 acres of recharge ponds in the San Jacinto River. And they're shown there in green. They've continued to operate for over a decade successfully for EMWD. You may recognize those are the same ponds, though, that just were subject to erosion in the February rains and required our crews to go out and do substantial rehab repair to continue to allow those to operate as recharge ponds. As the district embarked in its enhanced recharge and recovery program, recognized the need to nearly double the amount of recharge in that area, which requires additional recharge ponds, additional recharge area, surface area. And have initiated a property evaluation and identification effort throughout that part of our district. You'll see the Mountain Avenue West ponds shown here in blue. This is ponds that have now been completed throughout final design and will be going to bid here in the next 60 days. The district will embark in the construction of roughly 25 acres of ponds on that 40-acre site. As part of our master plan for the Enhanced Recharge Recovery Program, we've identified other recharge sites, including a site well to the north, Lake Park Drive, near the bridge that leads to the Sebago Resort. This particular piece of property is 9.08 acres and zoned neighborhood commercial. It is currently listed for sale at $4.35 million. It's been on the market for close to 6 months. Staff has been engaged with the broker and the property owner and has ordered an appraisal, which resulted in a fair market value of $2.175. So that appraisal was conducted by Epic Land Solutions and included up to 9 commercial property comparisons within a 2-mile area. Staff made an offer for the full appraised value contingent of board approval, and the property owner agreed to sell the property at that appraised value. We continue to complete our due diligence, our discovery. We've recently completed a phase one environmental site assessment that had no significant findings. However, they recommended soil testing, which puts us into a phase two environmental site assessment. We expected to have to conduct soil testing. We've had to conduct soil testing on all of the other acquisitions that we've completed in the last 8 years out there, mainly because this was historically used for ag and groves, and they're concerned about any type of pesticides that may or may not have been used. Happy to report that all those earlier soil testings did not find any significant concerns. This is currently owned by the Reeser Family Trust, and I understand that the property has been under that family control for over 100 years, and they were the local farmers of the groves in that valley, that part of the valley, including Mountain Avenue West. So we're going to continue to complete all of our due diligence, all of our discovery, and all of our issues as it relates to title on the property. Staff's working very hard to clear all of those issues, and we would not make a recommendation to our general manager to close escrow until all of those issues are sorted out. If the board approves this item today, it would allow the general manager or his designee to process all documents that would be required to finalize a property purchase and administrative award or contracts necessary to secure and or clean the site upon close of escrow. We're asking for an appropriation of $2.21 million today. So I'll be happy to take any questions the board may have.
So just want to make sure that you already mentioned it, but you're being very diligent and very thorough about investigations. And I'm less concerned about pesticides as I am equipment that's been stored there and asphalt that's been piled there. And so assuming all that goes okay, do you have any idea what it's going to cost to clear this property?
So it's a great question. As you know, as we conducted the design and all of the geotechnical work for Mountain Avenue West, the district invested close to $200,000 to understand exactly what's going on subsurface and what's going to result in prime recharge rates. The end of that story is that it's going to require us to remove close to 10 feet of material to get down to the highest recharge material, basically the sugar sand, if you will. So we're going to be able to remove all of those clay lenses and layers. All of our geotech work on the east side of Mountain Avenue West between Mountain Avenue and the levee indicate the exact same soil conditions. We expect we're going to have to pull out up to 10 feet of material on this property if it were ever to be developed as a recharge pond. So that would mean removal of all of the chopped asphalt, removal of any potential contaminants on surface.
Well, the soil underneath what's there now, I don't think is a concern about disposal, but the what's on top of it. I mean, how much, are there places to go with that sort of material that is not too outrageously expensive to dispose of?
We will look into that. As you know, we've had dust concerns and complaints in that area. I'm not sure we're going to move immediately to clear the chopped asphalt because this owner indicated that they placed the chopped asphalt to reduce dust issues out there as well. So it's really a question of when might we cost that out and perform that work. If we were to bid this out, we would make that a condition of the contractor to dispose and remove any material that would be contractor's responsibility in accordance with all local, state, and federal regulations.
Another option, depending on the contractor, we may, if they bring like a rock crushing plant to destroy the asphalt or grind it, we may want that product, so we could negotiate a credit changer if it was set up that way, such that we retain that material for use on other sites to maintain tank roadways or whatever.
I just want to make sure that there's not something there that's going to prove very difficult to, get rid of.
That's great input. We're also, we're going to be conducting specific soil tests as a suggestion of Woodard and Curran, who conducted that phase one environmental site assessment, specific to location of past practices.
As John mentioned that, John mentioned, we're having a hard look exactly what is there as a way of building structures, equipment. We'll identify the options for disposal with regards to asphalt, concrete, soil, those type of materials. Usually, find as part of the construction contract, a competitive bid environment. Contractors are really good at identifying those materials as a resource. They'll take asphalt, they'll take concrete, they'll grind it up, and they may even have other projects that they can apply it to or sell it. So there's definitely a market out there that will be factored into the bidding of those contracts. But you're absolutely right. There's other things and equipment out there that we need to make sure that we can dispose of, and we're not going to be stuck with.
So they just, will they leave what's there? There's a mobile home and some other things.
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of their requests was they wanted to leave the manufactured home, and we said that would be a deal breaker for us. And so we've asked the owner to vacate and remove that manufactured home. In fact, one of the trustees resides there, and they're going to be rent back to the district for no more than 45 calendar days, pay us a fair value for that. And we're going to retain $25,000 in the deal to ensure that that is removed responsibly.
Okay.
So, that again, that's just a manufactured home. They will be leaving. There's a block building there. It's roughly 7,000 square feet with a metal roof. I'd say it's in fair condition, but that will remain on property, and it would be a disposal cost to the district in the future.
Okay. If you're satisfied that there's nothing out there that's going to bite us,
there's some tile issues that we're working through. I mean, some small things like weed abatement notices from the city of San Jacinto. But there's other tile issues as it relates to cell tower license and lease. So this property owner leased out an area way on the northeast corner of that property, closer to the levee, to two different cell tower vendors. Those leases were run with the property. We will have to inherit those leases. We begin to understand where their easements, their power is run, what it means to our tile and future use. We expect that we'll have to renegotiate the relocation of those cell towers, likely to another piece of property within the property that we own here, and get it farther away from our potential recharge operations. We expect that's a future cost, and it could be close to $200,000. We'll be coming back to the board for your approval on that once we nail down those details. But, all of those are, I wouldn't say that they're deal breakers anyway, but we want to make sure that we lock in the size open. And our real property manager, Cheryl Sanders, is a broker as well, and her and her survey team are going to map up and map out all of these title issues as it relates to this 9 acres.
I was going to add for the board's consideration, as John mentioned earlier, we do need additional recharge capacity in this basin as part of our groundwater replenishment program. One of the considerations in us pursuing this property, if you go back to the prior slide, John, as John indicated, there was previously an area to the north designated for recharge. With the acquisition of this property, we would potentially avoid the construction of a pipeline to the north, which would be a significant savings to the program, and thus we will be able to recharge within the consolidated area around Mountain Avenue. So that is something that we considered when we looked at the economic benefit of this acquisition.
So that is a proposed 24-inch pipeline that runs, or is expected to run up Mountain Avenue, and it's the 24-inch diameter pipeline, roughly valued at $2 million. That would be a deferred cost or cost that we could avoid capital costs in the future. Also allows to centralize our recharge facilities to the intersection of Mountain and Esplanade. And we would not have to construct a small 9-acre Mountain Avenue North facility. If you recall, you know, everything generally flows from south to northwest. The farther south that we can produce recharge, the more effective our program would be.
Well, I'll move approval subject to, you know, completion of due diligence and no adverse findings. That's the way I can state it.
I don't know why you couldn't. I believe the board letter describes that as well.
Well, I'll second that.
All right, we have
Does your motion go away when we find something?
There's no motion. my motion, though. Yeah, no. We'll see what they find.
All right, we have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Item 5B is approved with Director Sullivan and Director Slauson absent.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
We will go into our informational items. Mr. Ward, are you going to do item 6A?
I am not. I would like to introduce Andy Rangelato. She is our engineering systems analyst.
Okay.
And for the past year, she has been tasked with compiling all of this data, analyzing the data, preparing me to come up and speak before the board. I've asked her to cover this item for the board's information. As you know, she did an incredible job at the board committee. I'm sure she did a great job for you today.
Very good. Well, good morning. Welcome.
Thank you, John. Good morning. So we have our second quarter enterprise performance measures. These are 12 proposed measures that are organized by the following categories: efficiency, reliability, service, safety, and financial performance. We produce these metrics to provide the board of directors critical and timely business and financial information and identify trends. So our first metric is efficiency. This is water operating costs per acre foot delivered. So quarter two results were favorable. October trended above due to lower than projected water sales and higher purchased water costs. Some of the water costs that we actually purchased for the month of September, it didn't hit the books till October. Our next efficiency measure is wastewater treatment operating costs per million gallons treated. Quarter two results were favorable. The next efficiency measure is recycled water operating costs per acre foot delivered. Quarter two results were favorable. December trended slightly above the goal line. That was due to an increase in operating costs and a decrease in acre foot sold. We had heavy rain in December. The next efficiency measure is self-generated power. So this is the power that we produce from solar panels, fuel cells, and microturbines. So we compare those to potential production, and that's provided by our vendors. So the trend for quarter two is favorable. So you can see here in the graph, the gray line is our potential production provided by our vendors, and the bar charts are what we actually produce. So now we roll into our reliability measures. This is the customer hours out of service. So the trend was above the goal line for quarter two. The largest outage was in October related to a planned new valve installation on Fruitvale Ave and Sanderson Ave in Hemet. There's also a leak in November on Evans and Orange Street in Paris. The important thing to note about this metric is 75% of our outages were planned, so we were able to notify our customers. The other 25% were on plan. So the next reliability measure is wastewater treatment reliability. This is the uptime of our treatment plants. The trend was favorable for quarter two. November was just slightly below the goal line. The Paris treatment plant was at 93% uptime for that month. Our next reliability measure is wastewater spills of collection and treatment systems. I'm happy to report there are no spills for the second quarter. So now we roll into our service measures. This is customer satisfaction score of last experience survey. These are customer service call-ins as well as customers who have recently contracted with the district regarding a system concern. We are trending slightly below the goal line on this. We're working closely with the customer service director to try and increase our sample size. We changed our survey system in the month of May, and we went from having a couple of thousand surveys a month to now we're only getting in the hundreds. So we're working closely to try and increase that sample size. So the primary drivers for underperformance were longer wait times due to an increase in call volume. In December, had a higher call rate due to customers requesting extensions during the holiday season. So now we roll into our safety measures. This is the injury and illness rate. The trend for the past two quarters is favorable. So I'm going to turn over the financial measures to John to wrap up. Are there any questions thus far?
Thank you very
much.
Thank you. So our first financial measures are general administrative costs. It's a percent of total operating costs. And as you heard, our sales were lower in December, which meant lower energy costs, which meant lower costs district-wide, and our fixed costs are a component of that. And it trended just slightly above the target at 11.9, where we ended in December. Next financial metric is our performance net operating margin. This is revenue in minus dollars out. You'll note two things. We're trending very well here, but we're also trending exactly along our historic average. And finally, investment performance compared to our three-year treasury yield. So this metric is set up to reflect a three-year rolling average of the treasury yield set to one and measure the district performance of its investments against that. So our investments continue to be focused on safety and liquidity relatively short term, and because of that, we're trending below that target line. So in summary, we have two to watch the next quarter. Customer hours out of service, as Annie pointed out. Trying to increase that sample size. When you only get a couple hundred respondents per month, it only takes a few very dissatisfied customers to move that needle. And finally, customer hours out of service is also trending a bit higher than normal. So with that, I'll be happy to take any questions the board may have.
Any questions?
Not for me.
Thank you very much. Great presentation. Appreciate it. Why don't we have Jeff give us an update on the pond repair, and then we'll take a break.
Actually, I think Tony is going to do that.
Very good. Good morning, Tony.
Hey, good morning.
Thought you got out of it, didn't you?
Jeff's designation.
I was ready to step in.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to come in and give you a brief update on our repair and restoration efforts out of the integrated groundwater recharge and recovery ponds. It is it's hard to believe that 6-7 weeks ago we experienced the type of rainfall and storms that we did, and as a result of that, we were left with some significant damage in several areas across the district, but my main focus today obviously is on these ponds. And these images were taken a day or two after this main storm had blown through. But as you can see, we were left with significant amounts of flooding, erosion, and just large amounts of damage to the berms and to the roads that all needed to be addressed. As the water levels started to subside, we were clearly left with some significant amounts of silt and some driftwood and debris that was deposited throughout the pond areas, all of which needed to be removed and addressed before we could start our recharge efforts. The arrows there show where we suffered significant breaches of our berms, and so staff are mobilized immediately to start the cleanup effort and to make our repairs. And here's a couple of images here of district staff using heavy equipment to clean, to get the cleanup effort going, and also to start building those berms again. So this is actually the first day that we started the recharge effort in the southern, in the South Pond, and that was on March the 8th with imported State Water Project deliveries for MWD. And we started out slowly because we wanted to make sure that we didn't do any damage to the integrity of the berms, and we wanted to keep an eye on the success rate of the percolation efforts at that time. And so as conditions permitted, staff did increase flow rates to maximize where we could the groundwater recharge efforts. And this here is a graph just to indicate how we started out on March the 8th. We started out at the South Ponds, and then by the 14th, we were able to start a limited recharge also at the North Pond and also at the Grant Avenue where permitted. And when we produced this graph, we, as you can see, we had 564 acre feet at the IRP ponds and 161 acre feet at Grant Avenue. When I checked yesterday, we were currently at 829 acre feet at the ponds, north and south, and we were at 247 acre feet at Grant Avenue. So we continue to, with our efforts there, to recharge as much as possible without, you know, going down to any of the repairs that we've made. So on the project schedule, we have completed the removal of debris and the driftwood from the North Ponds. I'm also happy to report that ahead of schedule, we have completed the removal of silt from the North Ponds, which was pretty excessive in a lot of areas. It was 4 to 5 feet deep. We had accumulation, so we've already addressed that. And we are continuing to work on restoring the interior and exterior berms. And we will be continuing, obviously, to resume our groundwater recharge operations in the North Ponds next. So a lot of effort has gone into getting this far, and I'm really happy with the performance of the staff out there. The project cost estimate is $58,500 for equipment rental. Staff labor has been estimated at $66,500, and the driftwood debris disposal fees was $3,500. With a contingency of $19,000, we are estimating the total cost of this project of $147,500 for this area. So we are currently a couple of weeks ahead of schedule. I don't want to jinx it, but the guys are working very hard out there, and I'm really happy with what we've accomplished so far, and I'd be willing to take any questions.
Is the staff on the heavy equipment, that's our staff, or is that contracted?
That is our staff. Okay. That is district staff.
Okay. So the real out-of-pocket cost on that is basically the rental of the equipment and the disposal fees.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Right.
With that, let's take a 10-minute break.